Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. So far, as the global economy keeps an eye on the Middle East, it is too soon to tell. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday today, October the 9th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. A brief couple of words here about the events in the Middle East the past couple of days, the immediate global reaction to it, and what might happen the longer the fighting goes on. The briefest of words, really, the very briefest, because today it's all been knee-jerk reaction. Oil is higher, which makes sense. Stocks finished on the upside in this country. Big oil companies and defense contractors were higher, also makes sense. The bond market was closed today for the federal holiday, and when it opens tomorrow, I want you to think flight to safety. People are going to be looking for high-quality assets as they do when things get uncertain. Bond prices will go up, right? Supply-demand. So yields, that is interest rates, are going to go down. Again, though, the longer the fighting goes on, the less we know what is going to happen. Over here in our corner of the news universe, we've got an eye on the calendar. Last week was jobs week. This week is going to be prices week. We get the producer price index on Wednesday. That's inflation at the wholesale level. Then the consumer price index on Thursday. That is what you and I are paying, both of which I mention because what is really driving this economy is the balancing act between those prices and our paychecks. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman gets us going.
Americans' average hourly earnings were 4.2% higher in September than 1 year ago, according to the Labor Department. September's consumer price index is expected to show that prices rose about 3.6%. Back of the envelope calculation, wages after accounting for inflation will likely be about 0.6% higher than 1 year ago. Former Bureau of Labor Statistics Commissioner Erica Groshen explains what this means to a typical household, with paychecks coming in and spending going out.
If you see an increase in people's paychecks, subtract the inflation rate from that, then you get how much their buying power has increased.
That's real wages. And for the last several months, they've been rising on an annual basis as pay increases have outpaced price increases. But go back a year to August 2022, and the reverse was true. Workers' real wages were down 2.7%. Now, says Groshen,
they're making up for the consumption power that they lost when prices are rising faster than wages.
And workers may never fully recover all the ground they've lost. Frank Fiorelli tracks wages at small business payroll firm Paychex.
We have seen wage growth slow down month to month.
Still, we've already had a few months of real wages going up, says John Lear at public opinion firm Morning Consult.
Consumers are definitely more willing to buy higher than expected goods and services. And I think that is a reflection of their personal finances being strengthened as inflation cools a little bit and then wage gains remain fairly robust.
So far, rising wages have benefited low-wage workers the most. The real wages of production and non-supervisory workers have risen 0.9% over the past year, compared to just 0.5% for workers overall. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street today, as I said, knee-jerk reaction. Stock futures were down all weekend and into the open this morning. Then right after lunch, East Coast time, the algorithms decided maybe things weren't so bad after all. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. You don't get to be a Nobel Prize winner in the hard or social sciences without having written a lot. Books sometimes, but research papers certainly. And more often than not, over the decades that Nobel winners are typically judged, they have dozens and perhaps dozens more co-authors on those papers. So when Claudia Golden won the economics Nobel this morning for, in the committee's words, having advanced our understanding of women's labor market outcomes, we asked Marketplace's Kimberly Adams to track down some of Golden's colleagues to talk about her work and the work that remains to be done.
Claudia Golden may be one of economics' greatest explainers. Here's the Nobel Committee's Randy Jalmarsson speaking at today's announcement of the prize, describing the work of the economic historian and labor economist.
She can explain why the earnings gap hardly closed for much of the 1900s. She can explain why the gender gap in earnings suddenly started to close in the 1980s. And she can explain why the earnings gap has stopped closing today.
Including how the pandemic affected the earnings gap. Some of Golden's more recent research looks deep into the data of the economic impact of COVID-19 and found it had a greater impact on women's employment and labor force participation than men. Impacts that persist, according to Sari Kerr at Wellesley College, who co-authored a working paper with Golden on women in the workforce and the career gap.
We still have the perpetual question of how to afford daycare and childcare and elder care. And since that care burden is so unevenly distributed still between men and women, and how to manage that, those are big questions, certainly.
Another big topic that Golden has been working on for decades is another gender gap, the relatively small number of women economists. Golden has spearheaded several efforts to address the root causes of that problem and has a working paper on the topic with Tatiana Avalova, who teaches economics at Bowdoin College and works with Golden on a project called the Undergraduate Women in Economics Challenge.
I do want to say that Claudia, you know, deserves this award even more for the kind of mentoring and advising that she has done, not just for me, but for generations of women in economics.
But like the gender wage gap, that disparity seems to be stubbornly large and stuck and in need of more research in economics to come up with long-term solutions. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
If you'd have been listening to the Marketplace Morning Report today, you'd have heard that announcement being made almost in real time as David Brancaccio and his team cover the news. You should check it out, too, every day. It's about to be 4 years since we heard the first rumblings of what turned out to be COVID, and then, of course, the early whispers of the pandemic that followed. When it all started, a lot of businesses had to close up shop temporarily while they figured out how to get things done under strict new guidelines and with really nervous customers. There was a lot of talk back then about helping this country's small businesses stay alive. PPP loans are probably the best known example. Government assistance to get companies through the worst of it until the vaccines came online and things got back to normal. But things never really went back to actual normal, did they? Labor shortages and supply chain snags, changes in us consumers and how we're behaving. A lot of businesses survived those toughest days, only to fail on the other side. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab talked to some people to hear what happened to them.
It's been more than 2 years since Alexis Percival and her business partners closed Kindred, an Italian restaurant in New York City.
And our sign is still up, which is a bummer. And the door that I personally painted is still the same color.
The door is bright teal, a shock of color against the brown paper that covers the restaurant's windows. When the pandemic shuttered businesses in 2020, Kindred was still new and had just found its footing.
We were just starting to be in the black, which was sort of unheard of for 5 months in at a restaurant.
COVID turned that black back to red. And so, like every other business trying to avoid closure, Percival made pivot after pivot.
I'm so sick of that word all these years later.
Kindred turned into a market, then a co-working space, and that helped the restaurant hang on until the COVID vaccines came out and customers felt safe.
That was like a return to semi-normal. People were so excited, so relieved. It felt like, okay, this is great.
But the feeling didn't last long. Business was up and down. Kindred was supposed to get an employee retention tax credit from the IRS, $100,000. That was delayed. They fell behind on rent. And looming in their minds were their investors, mostly friends and family.
And that sense of responsibility, it weighs heavily. You have a ton of people that invest a small amount of money, but it's not a small amount of money to them.
That's partly why the decision to close the restaurant was difficult. In August of 2022, Percival and her partners ran their last dinner service, though they still own a wine bar called Ruffian a few blocks away. It's unclear how many businesses have closed down in the past couple years, because data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics lags. But the pandemic is still having a domino effect on small businesses. Becky Cooper and her husband opened Bounce Milwaukee a decade ago when she was having trouble finding activities for her family. Her husband thought, why not open our own entertainment center?
And I said, I hate those places. I hate Chuck E. Cheese. I hate, you know, all these trampoline parks.
Her husband persisted, and they dreamt up a business with rock climbing, laser tag, and a bouncy castle.
And we ended up getting our SBA loan and a positive pregnancy test on the same day.
That was kid number four. 10 years and a whole pandemic later, business was actually better than ever. But recently, Cooper's landlord increased the rent by 50%, way more than she could afford. So now Bounce Milwaukee is closing. Cooper says after all the ups and downs of business, she's okay with that and is content with the work she's done. She plans on looking for a job at a nonprofit. And in some ways, she's sort of relieved not to be the boss anymore.
It'll be really nice having someone make all the decisions and tell me what to do.
It seems like every business that's closed down has its own story, whether they couldn't make rent or get enough customers back in the door. Jimmy Sweeney, who owned the Grandberry Theater in Fort Worth, Texas, says he knew he was in trouble in 2021 when he threw an Oscars party and three people showed up.
And that was a moment of like, man, this is still going to be so much more of an uphill climb than we thought.
The Grandberry Theater screened its last film in March of 2022.
I just remember after the doors closed and after our last employee left, I was just kind of sitting there and just broke down a little bit.
Since closing the theater, Sweeney and his wife sold their belongings and are traveling with their three-year-old until they figure out their next steps. They're actually in Italy right now. And in some ways, he says this new lifestyle feels entrepreneurial.
Traveling and living the way we do has a major essence of that.
He says he loved running his business. It was also stressful. And as hard as it was to close, he's okay with moving on. In New York, I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Coming up,
we notice cornerstones of buildings. We notice murals and alleyways.
It's all in the details, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 197 points today, 0.6%, 33,604. The NASDAQ up 52 points, about 0.4%, 13,484. The S&P 500, 27 points to the good, 0.6%, 43,035. Some U.S. airlines suspended direct flights to Israel today. Those were United, down 4.9%. Delta, which lost 4.6%. American Airlines dipped 0.4% today. We heard from both Mitchell Hartman and Kimberly Adams about wages, both real wages and the wage gap. still faced by women in the workplace. So looking at some payroll stocks, Paychex Inc. and ADP, both grew about 1.5%. Pharmacy staff at some Walgreens stores walked out today, citing working conditions that make it unsafe to fill prescriptions. Walgreens Boots Alliance up 0.2% today. Competitor CVS rose 1.9%. Bond prices, as I said, the bond market was closed today, open tomorrow. Flight to quality. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We have come to that week of the fiscal quarter when the big Wall Street banks share with us, as required by law, by the way, how they are doing. JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, Citibank all report quarterly profits on Friday. And a lot of attention is going to be focused on their lending lines of business as they make or try to make the transition from low interest rates of the before times to the not low interest rates of today. And as Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, those rates are indeed hitting the loan desks.
As interest rates have risen over the last 18 months, the market for mortgages has pretty much collapsed.
It's just simply unaffordable to get a loan.
Susan Wachter is a professor of real estate and finance at Wharton. She points out the collapse has already affected banks' balance sheets.
For many banks, this has been historically a profit center, but it's not a profit center any longer. This is a loss maker.
Wachter says banks have reacted by cutting staff, but the collapse is even more painful at non-bank lenders, which actually issue the majority of mortgages. Ben Elliott is a consumer financials analyst for Bloomberg Intelligence.
They're all fighting over a smaller pie. So what you've seen in the industry is relatively large-scale layoffs.
High interest rates are affecting commercial real estate lending, too. Merrill J. Reynolds is a banking industry consultant based in Texas. He says banks he works with are seeing less demand and that borrowers are having a harder time making payments.
We're starting to see delinquencies starting to pick up, and I think they're going to continue to grow over the next 6, 12, 18 months.
Thing is, while mortgages and commercial real estate loans are hurting, banks are actually lending more money overall right now. Loan balances were up 4.5% at the end of June from last year, according to the FDIC. And financial risk consultant Myra Rodriguez-Valladares says that's good news for the biggest banks.
All those banks are fine, more than fine, because they have not only the loans of every kind, but they also have asset management. They also have investment banking.
Rodriguez Valladares says this is a lesson in the importance of diversification, as opposed to concentrating in just one particular area, which she calls a major no-no. I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Whether we're ready for it or not, whether, depending on where you're coming from, whether you want it to or not, a greener economy is coming. New factories are going up from Tucson to Pensacola to Rochester to build electric vehicles and batteries, wind turbines and solar panels, and all the associated infrastructure. There are also billions of federal dollars on offer for green technology. But that money could go wanting if there's not a labor force at the ready. Millions of workers, for many of whom, these are going to be brand new careers and jobs that they are going to need training for fast. Emily Jones from WABE and Grist explains how Georgia is educating its growing green workforce.
In a warehouse near Savannah, Georgia, a series of long tables hold the innards of several car seats.
They're different stages of deconstruction.
Roger Brown is with Quick Start, the state's workforce training program.
So this is just the base.
At the start of the line is an unidentifiable collection of frames, connectors, hinges, and tracks. But as you go along, the assembly gets more complete, till you can recognize that with some upholstery, this would be the front seat of a car. It's all to help teach Georgia workers.
They're going to learn how to assemble and install these seating systems that will go into the IONIQ 6.
The IONIQ 6 is Hyundai's electric car that will eventually be built at the company's new Meta plant about an hour away. But until that factory is constructed, no other company is manufacturing EVs in this area. So some of Hyundai's new employees will first come here to learn how to do their job. Many workers will be changing careers entirely.
Imagine they came from, say, a McDonald's or some retail industry.
Brandon Chadwick is a training coordinator here.
They can come here and we will get them up to speed so that they can be automotive manufacturing professionals.
The state of Georgia funds the Quick Start program. In 2023, the state put $95,000 toward the program, but that doesn't include things like faculty salaries. For Georgia, it's a way to attract new manufacturers. And for decades, the program has set up training like this for new factories all over the state. Brown says other states have emulated this model. Quick Start also teaches workers for solar panel manufacturer, Q-Cells. That company is expanding, so the program is training even more people.
They have an experience as if we brought them in into our factory and onboarded them.
Lisa Nash is the head of HR at the Q-Cells Georgia factories. She says the program is especially important during a ramp-up when the company is hiring hundreds of new people at once and the factory is still under construction. Nash says without Quick Start,
I would never be able to train the volume of people. It would have delayed our ramp-up significantly.
Delays aren't just bad for the company's bottom line. The race to cut carbon emissions to fight climate change is urgent, and solar panels and electric vehicles are essential. Quick Start gives Georgia a leg up, at least in manufacturing. And the program gives a leg up to individual workers like Robert Howie, too. He used to work in carpet manufacturing.
I was pretty nervous coming into the solar industry. I had no idea about the process or how the solar panel was even made.
Howie says making carpet was a good job, but Quick Start trained him for work at Q-Cells, where he makes more money, and he plans to stay.
The solar became my career.
Howie's since been promoted at Q-Cells, and now he's helping Quick Start train Georgia's new crop of clean energy workers. In Port Wentworth, Georgia, I'm Emily Jones for Marketplace.
We'll be right back. Sometimes your job is fine. You like it well enough. It's a steady paycheck and all that. But sometimes you just want to do something else. That's the setup for this latest installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Lisa Fenya, and I'm the owner of Urban Hikes, Kansas City. Urban hiking is when you're actually walking around in the downtown areas or neighborhoods of a city and exploring them on foot. We notice cornerstones of buildings. We notice murals and alleyways, or maybe a distressed door that we wouldn't see if we were just flying by in a car. At the beginning, I didn't know how much money I was going to earn. I literally was starting from scratch. There was no other urban hiking sector in Kansas City. And I started it out as a side hustle. But after having my urban hikes for about a year, I realized that if I wanted my urban hiking business to grow, that I would need to focus full time on it. And that was a scary leap. So I really had to consider if it was worth it to stop working a full time job. And I had to take into account just our family income and if it would be okay if I didn't make money for a while at the beginning. When I was considering my pricing, I first set the price of $28 per person. And then with time, prices have gone up in our country. And now my prices are $38 a person. But it was a struggle to raise prices. I had to think to myself, is this something that people will pay for if I raise the prices? Thankfully, I didn't get pushback. So I think that our audience is really finding the value in them. The first year and the second year, I really didn't make any money to bring home and pay for my bills and that type of thing in comparison to costs that I had to run the business, like insurance and paying the guides that I have. But in 2021, we saw about 1,000 people. And by the end of 2022, we had about 10 different urban hiking routes. And we also had 6 different guides in addition to myself. And finally, I am making an income that is a sustaining income. I just gave an urban hike yesterday to students that are part of an advanced Spanish class. And so I'm also bilingual. And so I gave the hike in Spanish. And it was so fun. Like, we went to the Hispanic parts of the neighborhood and we visited like a Mexican-American coffee shop owner. And so it was just so cool, like such an immersive experience. And we talked about the history of a specific neighborhood called the West Side and why it has a Mexican history. And so it's like to hear from Kansas Cityans that they saw so many things that they didn't know, that's what fills me up on my urban hikes.
Lisa Pena, guiding groups on both sides of the state line at Urban Hikes Kansas City. Wherever you are and however you get around, this series does not happen without you. So let us know what's going on, would you? There's a place you can do that at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today. We have talked the past couple of months, a couple of different times, I think, about the strength of the U.S. dollar as American interest rates have been going up and the American economy has been outperforming its peers. The greenback was up sharply today, too, for neither of those reasons. Remember, I mentioned the flight to safety, the flight to quality at the top of the program. And again, in the numbers, well, same deal with dollars. For all the domestic challenges we are having running this economy, the dollar is still the global reserve, and lots of people want it. Lots of dollar buying today. Lots of selling, by the way, on the Israeli shekel down to a 7-year low. All right, off we go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. I figured I ought to put a number on those oil prices I talked about, right? Brent North Sea up 4% today, $88 a barrel. Still, though, below its recent highs. Our daily production team includes Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, Sean McHenry, and Sophia Terenzio. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.